Hello. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This is Anna Kogal from the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from the September-October 17 magazine and Glamour magazine. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached at kiwanisfoundation.org. Well, I hope you had a great Halloween if you celebrated Halloween, and hope you're having a great fall. I know some of you are, getting ready to maybe apply for colleges. And, the 17 magazine has some help for you. It's called Quad Goals. When it comes to choosing a college, there's something important that you probably don't know. There is no one right school for you. Seriously, though, there are more than 4,000 colleges and universities across the country, which means there are plenty of places where you would have an amazing experience. So instead of freaking out about finding the one, use this info to help focus your search and weed out the spots that are a definite waste of your time. Your college choice checklist. What's important when considering your options and what's not. All right, here we go. These are important. Green check marks. A solid roster of majors. Research shows undergraduates switch up their areas of study 2 to 3 times. So even though you may want to focus on art history now, make sure some of your other interests are offered too. All right, professors you're excited about. You shouldn't just look at available classes, but also who's teaching them, since one of your profs may become your mentor, says Kat Cohen, PhD, CEO and founder of Ivy Wise, an educational consulting company. It's a real bonus when you have teachers who have done something notable in your academic field. And this one is, insert your must-have item here, or items. Come up with a few non-academic things that would truly sweeten your experience. Maybe it's good vegan food on campus, or an active LGBTQ student body. And don't apply anywhere that doesn't meet those standards. With so many options, you don't have to settle. All right, and here are the, maybe not important. Your parents are alums. There can be a lot of pressure to go to a legacy school. If you love where your mom and dad went, great. But if you don't, speak up. What worked for them may not work for you. You're following someone there. Relationships change, and nothing is going to cause a case of, what am I doing here, to set in faster than a breakup with a BAE or BFF. Pick the college that's best for you. Maybe it's the same place as your bestie, but if not, plan for lots of FaceTiming. And finally, it's a cool school. Whether you're wowed by a big name that's ranked high on every list, a school with a championship sports team, or a celeb on campus, making your selection based on what's trendy, could cause you to overlook what wouldn't make it a good fit. All right, and why I chose a Girls Who Write for Fresh You, a site produced for and by college students, explain their final picks. So why I chose a small school. After attending a big public high school, the last thing I wanted was to go to a huge university. I wanted a break from classrooms stuffed with students, and I found the smaller setting makes it easier to connect with professors outside of class. And that is from a gal who is 19 going to Nova Southeastern University. Her name is Reniqua. Okay, why I chose a city school. A college in the city was really important to me because I wanted to be close to numerous intern and career opportunities. I also appreciate the fact that there's so much culture and plenty of shopping centers close by, which is helpful when you don't have a car. And that's from Ciara, 19. She's at Loyola Marymount University. School far from home. Choosing a college away from where I lived my entire life was crucial for me because I felt like it would allow me to become my own person. I've always lived in my sister's shadow, but being off on my own allowed me to be my authentic self and thrive as an individual. And that's from Brianna, 19, St. John's University. Why I chose a school close to home. I grew up in the Midwest, and even though I know there may be greater opportunities elsewhere, I feel like our area could benefit from strong, smart minds. So I decided to stay and invest in my community. And that's from Cameron, 19, University of Nebraska, Omaha. Historically Black University. Picking a school was hard for me at first, but now I can't imagine being anywhere else. Being surrounded by my Blackness has given me a sense of self that I've never experienced before. I feel really proud to be at this school. And that's from Sean, 18, at Xavier University of Louisiana. And why I chose a community college. I went this route because I needed to be really sure about where I wanted to go before committing to a four-year university. Going to a community college gave me time to figure out what I wanted to be, and I also got to save money. Birdie, 20, Saddleback Community College. And finally, why I chose a women's college. At first, I had no interest in attending an all-women's college. But because everyone is so encouraging, it's the perfect place for me to figure out my interests academically, push myself, and reach my potential in a supportive environment. And that was from Yasmin, 21, Wellesley College. All right, we're going to continue with some career questions. Should you take more risks? Stacy Brown Philpott, the visionary CEO of TaskRabbit, has some answers by Wendy Noggle, and this is from the Glamour magazine. Stacy Brown Philpott could have stayed in the dream job. I had been at Google when it grew from 1,000 employees to 50,000, says Brown Philpott, 41. I had this corner office, and everybody was like, this is amazing. I felt comfortable, extremely comfortable, until I realized I'm supposed to be taking chances. I said, I love this, but this isn't what I'm supposed to be doing. She had already made a big move once, leaving investment banking to go to grad school. So now she made a second, saying goodbye to Google, to become CEO of TaskRabbit, a digital marketplace that connects freelancers to jobs. In the years since, she's expanded the company from 9 cities to 40 and became known as leader in the new gig economy. Here she nudges you to take your next career risk. Forget the safety net. I grew up in the city of Detroit, where things were just bad. I didn't always have a safety net. My mother's salary was the same as the first year of college tuition. You have to do what it takes to get what you want. I didn't sleep much in school because I worked a lot. You figure out how to make it happen. Share your real goals. In grad school at Stanford, I found people I trusted, and I was able to be vulnerable with them. When we were deciding what we wanted to do in our careers, I remember thinking, I should go back to investment banking. I was good at investment banking. They were like, you told me you didn't come to Stanford to go back to investment banking. Keep going until you find the thing you're passionate about. That's how I got to Google. Get your brain food. I think about athletes who are at their best. Let's take Serena Williams. She doesn't compete all the time every day. She gets a break to sleep and to practice. And then she has to play. I try to take moments to get brain food. I read. I listen to talk radio. And fill my own self with learning. Embrace your story. Early on in my career, I felt like I had to dress a certain way or know about certain TV shows to be one of the guys. When you walk into a room and you're the only one of something, the only woman or the only African American, that immediate feeling of loneliness happens. I do think my exterior sometimes prevents people from understanding the interior. I don't run from it. I try to have the conversation in a way that's like, let me get all that off the table. Yes, I'm a black woman, CEO. Yes, I'm from Detroit. Yes, it's different. Now, can we talk about TaskRabbit? Because that's why I'm here. I learned that the easiest thing I can do is be fully who I am. And help others embrace you. Once, years ago, in a meeting, people wanted an employee to represent the company well, and someone recommended that she straighten her hair. I said, that just doesn't sound right to me. And later I pulled the person aside and said, look, I wear my hair curly. Watching you tell someone they need to straighten their hair to look presentable makes me feel bad. I don't know how she felt about it, but this is how it made me feel. He apologized. Ask for what you need. The hardest part for a lot of women is to think about what you really need to be successful and to go ask for that. But all they can do is say no. Early on, I'd go to my manager and say, what are you working on that you don't like to do? I'll take that off your plate. I want to learn. He gave me a lot. I said, great. To do it, I need these two things. And all of a sudden, you've helped your manager. They see you want to grow, and you're teaching them how to help you grow. And if they say no, don't lose confidence. Just get back up. And finally, just a quote from Brown Philpott. Find peers who push you, who, if you make a mistake, say, that's okay. We're here to support you. Then you can learn from failure, and it actually feels good. All right, and here we're going to be talking about some women who retired before 35. You could hate them, but don't. These women are here to help the rest of us get richer, too. And this is from the October Glamour magazine. The idea of retiring from full-time work while you're in your 30s or younger can sound very 1%. But the women you're about to meet aren't that. They're self-made, and they didn't invent a photo-sharing app or win the lottery either. Instead, they micromanaged their budgets and leveraged their salaries into hundreds of thousands of dollars, all finding a way to cash out before their 35th birthdays. Here's how they did it. I learned the stock market. Tella Holcomb, 33, former government contractor, Las Vegas. When I was making $70,000 a year as a government contractor, I lived on only $50,000. I'd invite people over for a bottle of wine to watch Scandal instead of going out. I was a single mom and took advantage of my job's flexible spending account, which allowed me to use pre-tax dollars for child care. In 2009, I read The Complete Turtle Trader by a Wall Street trader who taught basic investing techniques to random people off the street. Those regular people made $175 million in 5 years. I was inspired. So I approached investing as if I were in school, practicing and studying for 9 months before finally starting to invest with $3,000 of the money I'd saved. Since then, I've invested another $70,000 and have grown it to three times that. My strategy is, quote, trend trading. I find trends in stocks that occur at the same time each year due to fiscal policy, changes in the international economy, and general shifts in supply and demand. For example, I discovered that Amazon stock tends to go up every May, and this year I made over $900 on that alone. My goal was to retire in 2014, but in 2012, I got laid off. I was devastated until I realized I'd already been matching, sometimes exceeding, my paychecks just from trading. I rolled $41,000 from my 401k into a Roth IRA so that I could invest that too. Just be careful if you do this. You will still have to pay taxes and fees on the rollover amount. Within 8 months, it grew to $97,000. I officially retired at 29. I'm now based in Las Vegas with my daughter and husband. He works 2 months out of the year by choice, but I support us financially. My net worth right now is $600,000, and in 2 years, I'm projecting $1 million. Although I'm retired, I teach and give talks on money occasionally. When I worked full-time, I was too drained to enjoy life outside of the office, and I feel the opposite now. I'll check my stocks twice a day for about 20 minutes, but otherwise I'm free to drop my daughter off at school, take my Yorkie for a walk, and scrapbook. Tell his investing advice, create a paper money account on TD Ameritrade, a free simulation of the stock market, and practice on that for a few months before you actually start trading. When you do jump in for real, start with a modest amount. We paid off our debts first. Jillian, 34, and Adam Johnsrud, 39, former customer service representative and Army Sergeant, Kalispell, Montana. Jillian, 15 years ago, our original goal was just to pay back our combined debt of $55,000. So we got married outdoors with dollar store decorations and a potluck. I worked a crappy customer service job where people cursed me out over the phone, and I made about $30,000 a year. Adam. The Army offered a $35,000 loan repayment program, paid out over 3 years, so I joined. I was in basic training for our first anniversary and making $1,500 a month. Jillian. We lived in a trailer, then in a cheap house with a roommate off base. We gave ourselves only $50 of, quote, fun money a month each, and we mostly did free activities. But it added up. We were making about $50,000 and putting half of that toward the debt. The saving was key. I grew up under the poverty line, and there's a common destructive pattern among low-income folks. When you get a little cash, you want to spend it right away. But by saving it, took us only 2 years to pay off our debt. By the time I was 24, we'd saved our first $100,000. Adam, shortly after we repaid our debt, we adopted our son, who has special needs. We fell in love with him and realized we want to adopt 3 more special needs children. But we needed the financial resources and a flexible schedule to care for them. We had to find a way so that we didn't have to work crappy jobs to get by. Jillian, we bought 3 cheap properties and did DIY renovations. Now we rent two of them out, which is our primary source of income, along with Adam's small military pension. The rentals are responsible for about $300,000 of our current net worth. We stopped working in 2015, but we have a small amount of active income from my blog, Montana Money Adventures, that mostly goes to charity. Adam, we tag team on childcare, so each of us gets a few hours alone per day, and our monthly expenses total around $2,500. It took us 14 years, but we have the life we dreamed of, and we did raise our fund money to only $75 a month. Jillian's debt-paying advice? Consolidating your credit card debt into a single monthly payment can get you a lower interest rate. Ours was 9% versus the going 18%. But know that some consolidation officers can be scam artists. So look for a nonprofit that offers credit counseling or teach yourself with online tools. That lowered interest rate allowed us to pay off our debt and pay off our credit card debt. Also, tackle your debts one by one, starting with the most urgent. Make a plan and get to work. And finally, we became extremely frugal. Liz, 33, and Nate Thames, 34, former nonprofit workers, rural Vermont. Nate, we were debt-free when we got married. Our first jobs didn't pay much, but we were saving 40 to 50% of our income. By the time we were 27, we bought a house in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and started investing in a low-fee index fund. But after 8 years of working in cubicles, we realized that we really wanted to live near nature. Liz, we slashed expenses to increase the savings on our take-home pay to 70% of our combined salaries. Nate cut my hair. We ate out only twice a year, and he rode his bike to work. In 2015, our yearly expenses were only $13,000. When we found out I was pregnant that year, we asked friends for hand-me-down baby stuff. They were thrilled to get rid of things that we could use. Nate and I left our jobs last year to focus on moving to our 66-acre homestead in rural Vermont and raising our daughter. We didn't have a net worth goal in mind before retiring. We just wanted the income of our assets to become greater than our expenses. We achieved that sooner than we thought by renting out our Cambridge house and putting that toward our new mortgage and continuing to grow our investment in the low-fee index fund. Nate, we chose to get a mortgage because that helped diversify our assets. Mathematically, it's likely that our money will return a higher yield invested in the market than it would in a paid-off house. We spend our days pruning our apple trees, chopping firewood, or weeding our vegetable garden. Liz even wrote a book that comes out in 2018, Meet the Frugal Woods, Achieving Financial Independence Through Simple Living. Whatever money we take in will go toward charity or will be invested. Liz's Get Frugal advice? You can frugalize your diet by shopping at a bulk store like Costco. For breakfast, buy oats in bulk at $7.89 for a 10-pound box. That's 10 cents per serving. That saves about $76 a month, adding up to almost $1,000 per year. Stock up on pantry staples like beans and rice, which you can make ahead on a Sunday night. That comes to 39 cents a serving and works out to $3.90 a week for two adults. Buy and freeze expensive proteins when they're on sale. Shred them into a veggie stew and serve over brown rice. We spend $35 a week on groceries this way, and we still eat mostly organic. Now we're adding to that with foods that we grow and harvest. We're still new at farming, and it isn't a business for us. But we hope to be able to produce enough food to preserve for the winter. We're just enjoying a more sustainable, healthy lifestyle. This is our dream, to be happy, less stressed, and living peacefully in our simplicity. And there's a quote here from Liz. Identify what spending is most important to you first, so being frugal doesn't feel like a cutback. And that's, they retired at age 32. All right, we're going to end with Inside Jennifer Fisher's Fridge, healthy snacks from the jewelry designer and excellent home cook. Have a weekly list. She picks up, focuses on proteins that work at any meal, eggs, bacon, boneless, skinless, chicken breast, veggies like peppers, kale, and carrots, grab-and-go fruits, and fresh herbs like dill and cilantro for adding flavor. And then shop at off times to keep her fridge stocked. Fisher hits her local Whole Foods when the aisles are empty. I don't really go out on Friday nights, admits Fisher. I have more fun at the grocery store. And that ensures that her fridge has fresh, healthy snacks all weekend. I try not to eat out of packages, she says. And break up meal prep. Fisher has a genius trick to reducing evening work. She cooks a starch like potatoes or rice in the morning while she's getting ready for the day. I'll make, say, jasmine rice and store it in an airtight container, she says. Then, when she gets home from work, she sautés some shrimp for 2 minutes per side in olive oil and garlic butter, roasts up carrots and peppers, reheats the rice, and has a full dinner ready in 10 minutes. It takes some organizing, but it's worth it, she says. Another tip, pick a theme. Fisher also likes keeping everything in her fridge on a theme for the week in order to make easy combinations. I'll do a Mexican week and get things like peppers, lettuce, and tomatoes in bulk, she says. I can do tacos, huevos rancheros. It all goes together. And rather than make separate meals for her husband, their kids, and herself, Fisher sets out the ingredients for make-it-yourself bowls. Taco bowls and chicken Caesar salad bowls are favorites on the counter, so everyone in the family can pick and choose which ingredients they want and end up with a meal they actually like. Cooking is therapeutic for me, she says, and grocery shopping has become one of my favorite things to do. I know, I'm a total food geek. Well, we have run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Aniko Gal, reading for the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, triangleradioreadingservice.org. Today's programming is underwritten with support from the Raleigh Kiwanis Foundation. They can be reached by kiwanisfoundation.org. So long, until next time. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138.